just woke up, but are you up for a walk on the beach? She ventured. I have to take Scotty out soon. Sure, he said. Let me get my boots. By the time it was ready, Scotty was already standing next to the gate, his tail wagging. True opened the gate, allowing Hope to lead the way, and once on the beach, Scotty took off, racing toward a flock of birds. They followed slowly, the morning cooler than it had been on previous days. For a while, neither one of them seemed to want to break the silence. When True slipped his hand into hers, she seemed to hesitate before her hand finally relaxed. Her defenses were going up, and it registered as an ache. They walked in silence for a long time, Hope glancing at him only now and then. Mostly she seemed to be focusing on something in the distance, or out over the water. As it had been most of the week, the beach was empty and quiet. There were no boats, and even the gulls and terns seemed to have taken flight. Confirming his earlier feelings of dread, he now sensed with certainty that something had happened, that there was something she was afraid to tell him. He had a strong premonition that whatever was on her mind would both surprise and hurt him, and he felt his heart sink. Desperate, he thought again about all he wanted to tell her, but before he could speak the words, she raised her gaze to his. I'm sorry I'm so quiet, she offered, forcing a smile. I'm not very good company this morning. It's all right, he said. You had a late night. It's not that, she said. It's... She trailed off, and True felt a touch of spray from the waves. It left him damp and chilled. She cleared her throat. I want you to know I had no idea what was going to happen. I'm not sure what you're talking about. Her voice became softer, her fingers tightening in his grip. Josh showed up at the wedding. True felt his stomach tighten but said nothing. Hope went on. After the phone call the other night, he booked a flight to Wilmington. I guess he hadn't liked the way I sounded. He arrived right before the ceremony. He just showed up and could tell I wasn't happy about it. She took a few steps, watching the sand in front of her. It wasn't too hard to avoid him at first. After the ceremony, the bridal party had to sit for a lot of photographs, and I was seated with Ellen at the main table. I stuck with my girlfriends most of the evening, but toward the end of the reception, I went outside to cool off, and he found me. She drew a long breath, as if summoning the words she needed. He apologized, said he wanted to talk, and... As she spoke, True felt everything beginning to slip away. And, he prompted gently. She stopped walking and turned to face him. When he showed up, all I could think about was this week, and how much it's meant to me. Last week, I didn't even know you existed, so part of me can't help but wonder whether I'm crazy, because I know that I love you. True swallowed, noting that her eyes were bright with tears. Even now, when I'm here with you, all I can think is how right this feels, and I don't want to leave you. Then stay with me, he pleaded. We'll figure something out. It's not that simple, True. I love Josh, too. I know that this must be painful for you to hear, and the truth is that I don't feel the same way about him that I do for you. Her eyes beseeched him. You're both so different. She seemed to be grasping for something out of her reach. I feel like I am at war with myself, like two different people who want completely different things, but... When she appeared unable to continue, True gripped her arms. I can't imagine a life without you, Hope, and I don't want one. I want you, and only you, forever. Could you really give up what we have without regret? She stood frozen, her face a mask of anguish. No, I know there's a part of me that will regret it forever. He stared at her, trying to read her, already knowing what she was trying to tell him. You're not going to tell him about us, are you? I don't want to hurt him. and yet you're willing to keep secrets from him. He regretted the words as soon as they came out. That's not fair, she cried, shaking off his touch. Do you think I want to be in this position?
I didn't come here to make my life even more complicated than it already was.
I didn't come here because I wanted to fall in love with another man. But no matter what I decide, someone is going to be hurt, and I never, ever wanted that.
You're right, he murmured. I shouldn't have said it. It wasn't fair, and I apologize.
Her shoulders slumped, her anger slowly giving way to confusion again. Josh seemed different this time. Scared. Serious, she mused almost to herself. I just don't know. It was now or never, Chu suddenly realized, and he reached for her hand again.
I wanted to talk to you earlier about this, but last night when I couldn't sleep, I did a lot of thinking. About you and me. About us. And maybe you're not quite ready to hear it, but...
He swallowed, his eyes on hers.
I want you to come with me to Zimbabwe. I know it's asking a lot, but you could meet Andrew and we could make a life there. If you don't like that I'm in the bush so much, I can find something else to do.
Hope blinked without speaking, trying to absorb what he was saying. She opened her mouth to respond, then closed it again, even as she released his hand. She turned, facing the ocean, before finally shaking her head.
I don't want you to change who you are for me, Hope insisted. Guiding is important to you.
You're more important,
he said, hearing the desperation in his voice. Feeling the future, all his hopes begin to recede.
I love you. Don't you love me?
Of course I do.
Then before you say no, can you at least think about it?
I have, she said, so quietly you almost couldn't make out her voice over the sound of the surf. Yesterday, when I was coming back from the wedding, I thought about exactly that. Just running off to Africa with you. Leaving without a second thought, and part of me longed to do that. I imagined explaining the situation to my parents, sure that they'd give me their blessing, but... She raised her eyes to his, her expression drawn in anguish. How can I leave my dad, knowing he has only a few years left? I'll need to spend these last years with him, for me as much as him, because I know I'll never forgive myself if I don't. And my mom is going to need me, even if she thinks that she won't.
I could fly you back home as often as you want. Once a month, if that's what you need. Or even more. Money's not an issue.
True. He felt a surge of panic.
What if I move here? He offered. To North Carolina.
What about Andrew?
I'd fly back every month. I'll see him more than I do now. Whatever you need from me, I'll do it.
She stared at him in agony, her hand clenched in his. But what if you can't? She asked. The words were almost a whisper. What if there's something that I need that you can never give me? At her words, he flinched as if he had been slapped. All at once he understood what she'd been trying so hard not to tell him. That to be with him meant closing the door to having children of her own. Hadn't she told him about her lifelong dream? Her treasured image of holding the baby she had just given birth to? Of creating a human life for the man she treasured? More than anything, she wanted to be a mother. She wanted to give birth to a child, and it was the one thing he could not give her. In her face, the silent plea for forgiveness was as pronounced as her pain. He turned away, unable to face her. He'd always believed that anything was possible when it came to love, that any obstacle could be overcome. Wasn't that a truth that nearly everyone took for granted? As he struggled with the implacability of what Hope had just said, she hugged her arms to her body.
It makes me hate myself, she cried, her voice cracking. That there's this part of me that needs to have a baby. I wish I could imagine a life without a child, but I can't. I know it would be possible to adopt, and now there's even amazing medical technology, but... She shook her head and let out a long breath. It just wouldn't be the same. I hate that this is true for me, but it is.
For a long time, neither of them spoke, both of them staring at the waves. Finally, Hope said in a ragged voice, I never want to think to myself that I gave up my dream for you. I never want to have a reason to resent you. The thought terrifies me. She shook her head. I know how selfish I sound, how much I'm hurting you. But please don't ask me to go with you, because I will.
He reached for her hand and brought it to his lips, kissing it.
You're not selfish, he said.
But you despise me.
Never. He drew her into his arms, pulling her close. I'll always love you. There's nothing you can ever do or say that'll take that away.
Hope shook her head, trying and failing to keep the tears from spilling out.
There's something else, she said, her voice thick as she began to cry in earnest.
Something I haven't told you.
Inwardly, he braced himself. Somehow he knew what she was going to say.
Josh asked me to marry him last night, Hope said. He told me he's ready to start a family.
True said nothing. Instead, feeling dizzy, he slumped in her arms, as if his limbs had turned to lead. Though he wanted to console her, he felt a numbness spreading through him.
I'm so sorry, True, she said. I didn't know how to tell you last night. But I haven't given him an answer yet. I want you to know that. And I want you to understand that I had no idea he was going to ask me.
He swallowed, trying to keep his own emotions in check. Does it really matter that you didn't expect him to ask?
I don't know, she said. Right now I don't feel like I understand anything. All I know is that I never wanted it to end like this. I never wanted to hurt you.
A physical ache seemed to flow through him, beginning in his chest, and radiating outward until even his fingertips throbbed.
I can't force you to stay with me, he whispered. As much as I want to, I can't. Nor will I try, even if it means that I'll never see you again. But I would like to ask something of you.
Anything, she whispered. He swallowed. Will you try to remember me?
She made a strangled noise, and he knew she couldn't speak. Instead, she pressed her lips closed and nodded.
True pulled her closer, feeling her collapse into him, as if her legs would no longer support her. When she began to sob, True felt himself crumbling. Beyond them, the waves marched on, indifferent to the world slowing to a stop between them. He wanted her, and only her, forever. But that was impossible. Not anymore, for despite the love they felt for each other, True already knew what Hope's answer to Josh was going to be.
Back at the cottage, Hope cleared any items from the refrigerator that might spoil and put them in a garbage bag. When she headed to the shower, True brought the bag to the bins outside. His head was spinning, and by the time he returned to the kitchen, he heard the shower running in the bathroom. He rummaged through drawers until he located paper and a pen. Ravaged, he tried to order his feelings by putting words on the page. There was so much he wanted to say. When he was finished, he returned to his father's house and retrieved two drawings. He put those, along with the letter, into the glove compartment of her car, knowing that by the time she discovered them, their time together would already be in the past. When Hope finally emerged, she was carrying her suitcase. Dressed in jeans, a white blouse, and the sandals she'd picked up a few days earlier, she was heartbreakingly beautiful. He was sitting at the table again, and after turning out all the lights, Hope went to sit on his lap. She put her arms around him, and for a long time they simply held each other. When she pulled back, her expression was subdued.
"I should probably get going," she finally said.
"I know," he whispered.
She got up, and after putting Scotty on a leash, she moved slowly to the door. It was time. True picked up her suitcase, along with the box of mementos she'd collected earlier in the week. He followed her out the front door, pausing beside her as she locked the door and inhaling the wildflower scent of the shampoo she used. He loaded her things into the trunk while she put Scotty in the back seat. After closing the doors, she approached him slowly. He held her again, neither of them able to speak. When finally she pulled back, he tried a smile, even though everything was breaking inside.
"If you ever plan on taking a safari, make sure you let me know. I can tell you which lodges you should visit. It doesn't have to be in Zimbabwe. I have contacts all over the region. You can always reach me through the lodge at Hwangi."
"All right," she said in an unsteady voice.
"And if you just want to talk or see me, I'll make that happen. Airlines make the world a much smaller place. If you need me, I'll come. All right?"
She nodded, unable to meet his eyes, as she adjusted the purse strap on her shoulder. He wanted to beg her to come with him. He wanted to tell her that a love like theirs would never be replicated. He could feel the words forming, but they stayed inside him. He kissed her, softly, gently, one last time, then opened the door for her. When she was behind the wheel, he pushed the door shut, his hopes and dreams shattering at the sound. He heard the engine fire up and saw her roll down the window. She reached out, taking his hand in hers.
"I'll never forget you," she said.
And then, all at once, she let go. She put the car in reverse and began to back out of the driveway. True followed, as if in a trance. A ray of sunlight broke from the clouds, illuminating her car like a spotlight as it finally started rolling forward, away from him. She didn't glance in his direction. He continued to follow, drawn into the street. By then, her car was already growing smaller in the distance. It was 50 yards away, then even more, her image no longer visible through the rear window. But True continued to watch it. He felt hollowed out, a hull. The brake lights flashed once, and then suddenly steadied, glowing red. The car came to a halt, and he saw the driver's side door open. Hope stepped out and turned to face him. She seemed so far away, and when she blew him a final tender kiss, he couldn't bring himself to return the gesture. She waited for a moment, then got back in the car, the door closing behind her. The car started rolling forward again.
"Come back to me," he whispered,
watching as she reached the corner that led to the main road off the island. But she couldn't hear him. Ahead of him, the car slowed, but didn't stop. No longer able to watch, True bent over double, his hands on his knees. Beneath him, the asphalt bore the ink-blot stain of his tears. When he looked up again, the car had vanished completely, and the road was deserted.
Aftermath. Hope would never remember the drive back to Raleigh, nor would she remember much about her lunch with Josh that Sunday afternoon. He had called her numerous times since the wedding, leaving messages at her apartment, begging her to meet him. Reluctantly, she agreed to meet him at a local cafe, but while Josh was talking to her across the table, all she could think about was the way True had stood in the road, watching her go. Abruptly, she told Josh that she needed a few days to think about things, and left the restaurant before the food even arrived, feeling his stunned gaze on her as she hurried out. He appeared at her apartment a few hours later, and they spoke on her doorstep. He apologized again, Hope managing to mask her turmoil. After agreeing to meet with him on Thursday, She closed the door and leaned against it, utterly spent. She lay on the sofa in her living room, intending to doze for a short while, but somehow slept until the following morning. Her first thought upon waking was that True was already on his way back to Zimbabwe, the gulf between them increasing by the minute. It was all she could do to function at work. She moved on autopilot, and with the exception of a teenage girl who'd been in a horrific car accident, she remembered none of the patients. If the other nurses noticed how detached she seemed to be, they didn't say anything. On Wednesday, she planned to visit her parents after work. Her mom had left a message on her answering machine a couple of days earlier, saying that she'd be making stew, and Hope decided to pick up a blueberry pie from a local bakery on her way over. The only problem was that the bakery only accepted cash, and in her daze of the last few days, she'd forgotten to go to the bank. Remembering that she kept some money in the glove compartment for emergencies, she returned to the car and opened it up. As she rummaged for the cash, she knocked some of the contents to the floor, and it was only while cleaning up that she recognized the drawing of herself that True had completed. Seeing it in the car took her breath away. She knew he must have placed it in her glove compartment the morning she'd left. She stared at the image, her hands beginning to tremble, before remembering that she still had to pay for the pie. She carefully set the drawing on the passenger seat, then hurried back inside to complete her purchase. Back in the car, she didn't start the ignition. Instead, she reached for the drawing again. Examining the image of herself, she recognized a woman hopelessly in love with a man who'd drawn her, and she felt an intense longing to be held by him just one more time. She wanted to breathe in the scent of him, feel the coarse scratch of his stubble, stare into the face of the man who intuitively understood her in a way that no one ever had before, to be with a man who'd stolen her heart. Lowering it to her lap, she noticed another sheet of drawing paper in the open glove compartment. It was carefully folded. On top of it lay an envelope with her name on it. She picked them up with shaking hands. Unfolding the drawing first, she saw the two of them standing on the beach, gazing at each other in profile. The sight left her breathless, and she was only vaguely aware that a car had pulled into the spot next to her, the radio blaring. She stared at the image of True, flooded with longing. She forced herself to put it aside. The envelope felt heavy in her hands. She didn't want to open it, not here. She should wait until later when she was back at her place, when she was alone. But the letter was calling to her, and lifting the seal, she pulled it out and began to read.
Dear Hope, I'm not sure whether you want to read this, but in my confusion, I'm grasping at straws. Along with this letter, you'll find two drawings. Maybe you've already seen them. You might recognize the first one. I worked on the second one while you were at the rehearsal dinner and the wedding. I have a feeling that I'll complete more drawings of you when I get home, but I'd like to keep those, if it's all right with you. If not, please let me know. I can either send them to you or dispose of them and will not attempt another one. I hope that you believe that I am, and will always be, someone that you can trust. I want you to know that while imagining a life without you is unbearable, I understand your reasons. I saw your radiant expression when you spoke of having children, and I'll never forget it. I know how agonizing this choice has been for you. It's been devastating for me, but I can't find it in my heart to blame you. After all, I have a son, and I can't imagine life without him. After you leave, I suspect I'll walk the beach as I have every day since I arrived, but nothing will be the same. For with every step I take, I'll find myself thinking about you. I will feel you beside me and within me. You have already become part of me, after all, and I know with certainty that this will never change. I never expected to feel this way. How could I? For most of my life, and with the exception of my son, I've always felt as though I were meant to be alone. I'm not implying that I've lived the life of a hermit, because I haven't. And you already know that my job requires a certain level of social agreeableness. But I was never a person who felt incomplete without someone lying beside me in bed. I never felt as though I was only half of something better, until you came along. And when you did, I understood that I'd been fooling myself, and that I'd really been missing you all these long years. I don't know what that means for my future. I do know that I'm not going to be the same person I used to be, because that's no longer possible. I'm not naive enough to believe that memories will suffice, and in quiet moments, I may reach for drawing paper and try to capture whatever remains. I hope you will not deny me that. I wish that things could have been different for us, but fate seems to have had other plans. Still, you need to know this. The love I feel for you is real, and all the sadness that now comes with it is a price I would pay 1,000 times over. For knowing you and loving you, even for a short while, has given my life a different kind of meaning, and I know it always will. I'm not asking the same of you. I know what's coming next for you, the new life that you'll be living, and there's no room for a third person there. I accept that. The Chinese philosopher Lao Tzu once said that being loved deeply by someone gives you strength, and loving someone deeply gives you courage. I understand now what he meant. Because you came into my life, I can face the oncoming years with a kind of courage that I never knew I had. Loving you has made me more than I was. You know where I am, and where I'll be if you ever want to contact me. It might take time. I've already mentioned that the ward moves more slowly in the bush, and some items never reach their destination. But I firmly believe that you and I shared something special enough that if you reach out to me, the universe will somehow let me know. It's because of you, after all, that I now believe in miracles. With us, I want to believe that anything will always be possible. Loving you, True.
Hope read the letter a second time, then once more, before finally returning it to the envelope. She pictured True writing the letter as he'd sat in her kitchen, and though she wanted to read it again, she doubted she would be able to make it to her parents if she did. She stowed the drawings and the letter in the glove compartment, but didn't start the car right away. Instead, she leaned back against the headrest, trying to calm her raging emotions. Finally, after what seemed like forever, she forced herself to get on the road. Her legs were unsteady as she walked to the door of her parents' home. She forced a smile as she stepped through inside, watching as her dad struggled to rise from his recliner to greet her. The aroma from the kitchen filled the house, but Hope couldn't muster an appetite. At the table, she shared a few stories from the wedding. Asked about the rest of the week, she made no mention of True, nor did she tell her parents that Josh had proposed. After dessert, she retreated to the front porch, claiming a need for fresh air. By then, the sky was full of stars, and when she heard the screen door creak open, she saw her dad framed in the lights from the living room. He smiled and touched her shoulder as he shuffled carefully to the seat next to hers. He carried a cup of decaffeinated coffee with him, and after he settled in, he took a sip. "Your mom still makes the best beef stew I've ever tasted." "It was very good tonight," Hope agreed. "Are you feeling okay? You seemed a little quiet at dinner." She tucked a leg up beneath her. "Yeah, I guess I'm still recovering from the weekend." He placed the cup on the table between them. In the corner of the porch, a moth was dancing around the light, and crickets had begun their evening call. "I heard that Josh showed up at the wedding." When she turned toward him, he shrugged. "Your mom told me." "How did she find out?" "I'm not sure," he answered. "I'm assuming someone told her."
"Yes," Hope said. "He was there."
"And the two of you spoke?"
"A little," she said.
Until last week, she couldn't have imagined keeping the marriage proposal secret from her dad. But in the close, muggy air of that September evening, she couldn't form the words. Instead, she said, "We're going to have dinner tomorrow night." He looked over at his daughter, his soft eyes trying to read her.
"I hope it goes well," he said. "Whatever that means to you."
"Me too."
"He has some explaining to do, if you ask me."
"I know," she answered. Inside, she heard the grandfather clock chime. Earlier in the day, she had taken a dusty atlas down from the shelf at home and calculated the time difference with Zimbabwe. Counting forward, she figured out that it was now the middle of the night there. She assumed that True was in Bulawayo with Andrew and wondered what they had planned when they woke for the day. Would he take Andrew into the bush to see the animals, or would they kick a ball back and forth, or simply go for a walk? She wondered whether True was still thinking about her in the same way she couldn't stop thinking about him. In the silence, the words from his letter tried to force their way to the surface. She knew her dad was waiting for her to speak. In the past, when she'd had problems or concerns, she'd gone to him. He had a way of listening that always comforted her. Naturally empathetic, he seldom offered advice. He would instead ask what she thought she should do, silently encouraging her to trust her own instincts and judgment. But now, after reading what True had written, she couldn't help thinking that she'd made a terrible mistake. As she sat beside her father, her final morning with True began to replay in slow motion. She remembered the way True had looked when he'd stepped onto the deck, the feel of his hand in hers as they strolled down the beach. She recalled his stricken expression when she told him of Josh's proposal. Those weren't the most piercing memories, however. Instead, she thought about the way he'd begged her to come with him to Zimbabwe. She saw him bent over double as she made that final turn, away from a possible life together. She knew she could change things. It wasn't too late. She could book a flight to Zimbabwe tomorrow and go to him. She'd say that she knew now that the two of them were destined to grow old together. They could make love in a foreign locale, and she would become someone new, whose life she had only fantasized about. She wanted to say those things to her dad. She wanted to tell him everything. She wanted him to say that her happiness was all that mattered to him. But before she could speak, she felt a lick of breeze, and all at once, she pictured True sitting beside her at Kindred Spirit, the wind ruffling his thick hair. She'd done the right thing, hadn't she? Hadn't she? The crickets continued to sing, the night settling heavily, with an almost suffocating weight. Moonlight threaded the branches of the trees. On the street, a car passed by, the windows down and radio playing. She remembered the jazz music on the radio when True had held her in the kitchen.
"I forgot to ask you," her dad finally said, "and I know it was storming most of the week, but did you ever make it to Kindred Spirit?"
At his words, the dam suddenly burst, and Hope choked out a cry, which quickly gave way to sobbing.
"What did I say?"
he asked in a panic, but she could barely hear him.
"What's wrong? Talk to me, sweetheart."
She shook her head, unable to answer. In a haze, she felt her father put a hand on her knee. Even without opening her eyes, she knew he was staring at her with alarm and concern. But all she could think about was True, and there was nothing she could do to stop the tears. Part 2. Sands in the Hourglass. October 2014. Memories are a doorway to the past, and the more one treasures the memories, the wider the door will open. That's what Hope's father used to say anyway. And like many of the things he'd told her, the passage of time seemed to amplify its wisdom. But then again, time had a way of changing everything, she thought. As she reflected on her life, it seemed impossible to believe that nearly a quarter century had passed since those days at Sunset Beach. So much had happened since then, and she often felt as though she'd become an entirely different person than she once had been.
Now she was alone. It was early evening, with a hint of winter evident in the brisk air, and she sat on the back porch of her home in Raleigh, North Carolina. Moonlight was casting an eerie glow across the lawn and silvering the leaves that stirred in the breeze. The rustling sound made it seem as though voices of the past were calling to her, as they often did these days. She thought about her children, and as she moved the rocker slowly back and forth, the memories tumbled forth in a kaleidoscope of images. In the darkness, she recalled the awe she'd felt when holding each of them in the hospital. She smiled at the sight of them running naked down the hallway after taking their baths as toddlers. She thought about their gap-toothed smiles after their baby teeth fell out, and relived the mixture of pride and worry she'd experienced as they'd struggled through their teenage years. They were good kids, great kids. To her surprise, she realized that she could even recall Josh with a fondness that had once seemed impossible. They'd divorced 8 years ago, but at 60, Hope liked to believe that she'd reached the point where forgiveness came easily. Jacob had dropped by on Friday night, and Rachel had brought over bagels on Sunday morning. Neither of the kids had expressed any curiosity about Hope's announcement that she would be renting a cottage at the coast again, just as she'd done the year before. Their lack of interest wasn't unusual. Like so many young people, they were caught up in their own lives. Rachel had graduated in May, Jacob the year before that, and both had been able to find jobs even before they'd received their diplomas. Jacob sold ads at a local radio station while Rachel worked for an internet marketing firm. They had their own apartments and paid their own bills, which Hope knew was something of a rarity these days. Most of their friends had moved back in with their parents after they'd finished college, and privately, Hope considered her kids' independence even more noteworthy than their graduations. Even before packing her suitcase earlier that day, Hope had had her hair done. Since her retirement 2 years ago, she'd been visiting an upscale place near some high-end department stores. It was her one splurge these days. She'd come to know some of the women with the same regular schedule, and she'd sat in the chair, listening as the talk at the salon ran from husbands to kids to the vacations they'd taken over the summer. The easy conversation was a balm to Hope, and while there, she'd found her thoughts drifting to her parents. They had been gone for a long time now. Her father had passed away from ALS 18 years earlier. Her mom had survived 4 sad years more. She still missed them, but the pain of their loss had faded over the years into something more manageable, a dull ache that occurred only when she was feeling particularly blue. When her hair was done, Hope had left the salon, noting the BMWs and Mercedes, and the women exiting the department store loaded with bulging bags. She wondered whether their purchases had actually been necessary, or whether shopping was an addiction of sorts, the pull from the shelf offering a momentary respite from anxiety or depression. There had been a time in her life when Hope had occasionally shopped for the same reasons, but those days were long behind her, and she couldn't help but think that the world had changed in recent decades. People seemed more materialistic, more focused on keeping up with the Joneses, but Hope had learned that a meaningful life was seldom about such things. It was about experiences and relationships. It was about health and family and loving someone who loved you in return. She'd done her best to instill these notions in her kids, but who really knew whether she'd succeeded? These days, answers eluded her. Lately, she'd found herself asking why about many things, and while there were people who claimed to have all the answers, daytime television shows were replete with such experts, Hope was rarely persuaded. If there was one question she could have answered by any of them, it was simply this. Why does love always seem to require sacrifice? She didn't know. What she did know was that she'd observed it in her marriage, as a parent, and as the grown child of a father who'd been condemned to slowly waste away. But as much as she'd pondered the question, she still couldn't put her finger on the reason. Was sacrifice a necessary component of love? Were the words actually synonyms? Was the former proof of the latter, and vice versa? She didn't want to think that love had an intrinsic cost, that it required disappointment or pain or angst. But there were times when she couldn't help it. Despite the unforeseen events of her life, Hope wasn't unhappy. She understood that life wasn't easy for anyone, and she felt satisfied that she'd done the best she could. And yet, like everyone, she had regrets. And in the past couple of years, she'd revisited them more frequently. They would crop up unexpectedly, and often at the strangest of times, while she was putting cash into the church basket, for instance, or sweeping up some sugar that had spilled on the floor. When that happened, she would find herself recalling things she wished she could change, arguments that should have been avoided, words of forgiveness that had been left unspoken. Part of her wished she could turn back the clock and make different decisions. But when she was honest with herself, she questioned what she really could have changed. Mistakes were inevitable, and she'd concluded that regrets could impart important lessons in life, if one was willing to learn from them. And in that sense, she realized that her father had been only half correct about memories. They weren't, after all, only doorways to the past. She wanted to believe that they could also be doorways to a new and different kind of future. Hope shivered as a chilly gust swept through the back porch, and she knew it was time to head inside. She'd lived in this house for more than 2 decades. She and Josh had purchased it shortly after they'd taken their vows, and as she breathed in the familiar surroundings, she thought again how much she'd always adored the place. It was Georgian in style, with large columns out front, and wainscoting in most of the rooms on the main floor. Nonetheless, it was probably time to sell it. It was too much, too large for her, and trying to keep all the rooms dusted felt Sisyphean. The stairs, too, were becoming a challenge. But when she'd mentioned the idea of selling, Jacob and Rachel had balked at relinquishing their childhood home. Whether she sold it or not, it needed work. The hardwood floors were scuffed and scraped. In the dining room, the wallpaper had faded and needed to be replaced. The kitchen and bathrooms were still functional, but definitely outdated and in need of remodeling. There was so much to do. She wondered when, or even if, she'd be up to it. She moved through the house, turning off the lights. Some of the switches on the lamps were notoriously hard to turn, and it took longer than she expected. Her suitcase stood near the front door, next to the wooden box she'd retrieved from the attic. The sight of them made her think about True. But then again, she'd never really stopped thinking about him. He would be 66 now. She wondered whether he'd retired from guiding, or still lived in Zimbabwe. Perhaps he had moved to Europe or Australia or someplace even more exotic. She speculated about whether he lived near Andrew and whether he'd become a grandfather in the years they'd been apart. She wondered if he'd married again, whom he had dated, or even if he remembered her at all. Then again, was he even still alive? She liked to think she would have instinctively known if he was gone from this world, that they were somehow linked. But she admitted that might be wishful thinking. Mostly, though, she questioned whether the final words in his letter could possibly be true, whether for them anything would always be possible. In the bedroom, she put on the pajamas that Rachel had bought for her last Christmas. They were cozy and warm, exactly what Hope wanted. She slipped into bed and adjusted the covers, hoping for the sleep that so often eluded her these days. Last year at the beach, she'd lain awake thinking about True. She'd willed him to come back to her, reliving the days they'd spent together with vivid intensity. She remembered their encounter on the beach and the coffee they'd shared that very first morning. She replayed for the 100th time their dinner at Clancy's and their stroll back to the cottage. She felt his gaze on her as they sipped wine on the porch and the sound of his voice as he read the letter on the bench at Kindred Spirit. More than anything, she recalled the tender and sensual way they'd made love, the intensity of his expression, the words he'd whispered to her. She wondered at how immediate it all still felt, the tangible weight of his feelings for her, even the implacable guilt. Something had truly broken inside her that morning she left, but she wanted to believe that in the break, a stronger element had eventually taken root. In the aftermath, whenever life seemed unbearably difficult, she would think of True
and remind herself that if she ever reached the point where she needed him, he would come. He'd told her as much on their last morning together, and that promise was enough for her to carry on. That night at the beach, as sleep remained out of reach, she'd found herself attempting to rewrite history in a way that gave her peace. She imagined herself turning the car around the corner and racing back to him. She imagined sitting across the table from Josh and telling him that she'd met someone else. Dreamy images of a later reunion at the airport, where she'd gone to pick up True after his flight back from Zimbabwe, played out in her mind. In this fantasy, they embraced near the baggage claim and kissed amid throngs of people. He put his arm around her as they walked to her car, and she pictured the casual way he tossed his duffel bag into the trunk, as though it had actually happened. She imagined them making love in the apartment she once called home all those years ago. But after that, her visions had become clouded. She couldn't visualize the kind of house they would have chosen. When she pictured them in the kitchen, it was either at the cottage her parents had sold long ago or the home she owned with Josh. She couldn't imagine what True would do for a living. When she tried, she saw him returning at the end of the day dressed in the same kind of clothing he'd worn the week she'd met him, as though coming in from a game drive. She knew he'd regularly return to Bulawayo to see Andrew, but she had no frame of reference to even conjure up how his home or neighborhood might appear. And always, Andrew remained a 10-year-old, his features forever frozen in time, just as True remained forever 42. Strangely, when she fantasized about a life with True, Jacob and Rachel were always present. If she and True were eating at the table, Jacob was refusing to share his French fries with his sister. If True was drawing on the back porch of her parents' cottage, Rachel was finger painting at the picnic table. In the school auditorium, she sat beside True as Jacob and Rachel sang in the choir. On Halloween, she and True trailed behind her children, who were dressed as Woody and Jessie from Toy Story 2. Always, always, her children were in the life she imagined with True, and though she resented the intrusion, Josh was there as well. Jacob in particular bore a strong resemblance to his father, and Rachel had grown up thinking that one day she might become a doctor. Hope had eventually gotten out of bed. It was chilly at the beach, and putting on a jacket, she'd retrieved the letter True had written to her long ago, and seated herself on the back porch. She'd wanted to read it, but couldn't summon the will to do so. Instead, she'd stared at the darkness of the ocean, clutching the well-worn envelope, overwhelmed by a surge of loneliness. She'd thought to herself that she was alone at the beach, far from anyone she knew. Only True was with her. Except, of course, he was never really there at all. Hope had returned from her week at the beach the previous year with a mixture of hope and dread. This year she told herself that things would be different. She had decided that this would be her last trip to the cottage, and in the morning, after placing the box on the back seat, Hope rolled her suitcase to the rear of the car with a determined step. Her neighbor Ben was raking his lawn and came over to put it in the trunk. She was thankful for his help. At her age, injuries came more easily and were often slow to heal. Last year, she'd slipped in the kitchen, and though she hadn't fallen, catching herself had left her with a sore shoulder for weeks. She ran through her mental checklist before getting in the car. The doors were locked. She'd turned out all the lights. The garbage can stood by the curb, and Ben had agreed to collect her mail and newspapers. The drive would take her a bit less than 3 hours, but there was no reason to rush. Tomorrow, after all, was the day that mattered. Just thinking about it made her nervous. Thankfully, traffic was light for most of the trip. She drove past farmland and small towns, keeping a constant speed until she reached the outskirts of Wilmington, where she ate lunch at a bistro she remembered from the year before. Afterward, she swung by a grocery store to stock the refrigerator, stopped at the rental office to pick up the keys, and began the final leg of her journey. She found the cross street she needed, made a few turns, and eventually pulled in the drive. The cottage resembled the one her parents had once owned, with faded paint, steps leading up to the front door, and a weather-beaten porch out front. Seeing it made her miss the old homestead keenly. As she'd suspected, the The new owners had wasted no time in tearing it down and building a newer, larger home similar to the one where True had stayed. Since then, she'd only rarely visited Sunset Beach, as it no longer felt like home. Like many of the small towns dotting the coast, it had changed with the times. The pontoon bridge had been replaced with something more modern. Larger homes were now the norm, and Clancy's was gone as well, the old restaurant limping along until a year or two after the century began. Her sister Robin had been the one to tell her about the restaurant's closing. On a trip to Myrtle Beach 10 years ago, she and her husband had made a detour to the familial island because she, too, had been curious about the changes time had wrought. These days, Hope preferred Carolina Beach, an island a little ways to the north, and closer to Wilmington. She'd first visited it upon her counselor's suggestion in December 2005, when the divorce proceedings with Josh were at their worst. Josh had made plans to bring Jacob and Rachel out west for a week during winter break. The kids were young teenagers, moody in general, and the implosion of their parents' marriage had compounded the stress they were feeling. While Hope had recognized that the vacation might be a beneficial distraction for the kids, her counselor pointed out that spending the holidays at home alone wouldn't be good for her own mental state. She had suggested Carolina Beach to Hope. In the winter, she'd said, the island was low-key and relaxing. Hope had booked a place sight unseen, and the little cottage at the beach had turned out to be exactly what she'd needed. It was there where Hope had begun the process of healing, where she'd gathered the perspective she needed to enter the next phase of her life. She had known she wouldn't reconcile with Josh. She had cried over him for years, and while his last affair had been the deal-breaker, the first one was still the most painful to remember. At the time, the kids weren't yet in school, and their needs were constant. Meanwhile, her father had recently taken a turn for the worse. When Hope learned of the affair, Josh apologized and promised to end it. However, he remained in contact with the woman even as Hope's father got sicker and sicker. She felt as though she was on the verge of panic attacks for months, and it was the first time she'd considered ending the marriage. Instead, overwhelmed at the prospect of upheaval and afraid of the devastating effect divorce could have on her kids, she stuck it out and did her best to forgive. But other affairs followed. There were more tears and too much arguing, and by the time she finally told Josh that she wanted a divorce, they'd been sleeping in separate bedrooms for nearly a year. The day he moved out, he told her she was making the biggest mistake of her life. Despite her best intentions, bitterness and rancor surfaced in the divorce. She was shocked at the rage and sadness she felt, and Josh was equally angry and defensive. While the custody arrangements had been fairly straightforward, the financial wrangling had been a nightmare. Hope had stayed at home when the kids were young, and it wasn't until they were both in school that she went back to work, but no longer as a trauma nurse. Instead, she'd worked part-time with a family practice group so she could be home when the kids finished at school. While the hours were easier, the pay was less, and Josh's attorney argued strenuously that since she had the skills necessary to increase her salary, any alimony should be drastically reduced. Nor, like so many men, did Josh believe in an equal property division. By that point, Josh and Hope were communicating primarily through their lawyers. She had felt battered by emotion, feelings of failure, loss, anger, resolve, and fear. But as she walked the beach during that Christmas break, she worried mainly about the kids. She wanted to be the best mother she could be. But her counselor had continually reminded her that if she didn't take care of herself first, she wouldn't be able to provide the kids with the solid support they needed. Deep down, she knew her counselor was right, but the idea felt almost blasphemous. She'd been a mother so long that she wasn't even sure who she really was anymore. While at Carolina Beach, though, she had gradually accepted the notion that her emotional health was as important as the children's. Not more important, but not less important either. She also understood how slippery the slope might be if she didn't heed her counselor's advice. She'd seen women lose or gain substantial weight while going through a divorce. She'd heard them talking about Friday and Saturday nights at the bars and admitting to one-night stands with strangers, men they barely remembered. Some remarried quickly, and it was almost always a mistake. Even those who hadn't gone wild often developed self-destructive habits. Hope had seen divorced friends increase the 2 glasses of wine on the weekend to 3 or 4 glasses multiple times during the week. One of those women had come right out and said that drinking was the only way she'd survived her divorce. Hope didn't want to fall into the same trap, and her time at the beach was clarifying. After returning to Raleigh, she'd joined a gym and started taking spin classes. She'd added yoga to her routine, prepared healthy meals for herself and the kids, and even on nights she couldn't sleep, forced herself to stay in bed, breathing deeply, trying to discipline her mind. She'd learned to meditate and put a renewed emphasis on rekindling friendships where contact had lapsed in recent years. She had also made a vow to never say anything bad about Josh, which hadn't been easy, but had probably laid the groundwork for the relationship they had now. These days, most of her friends couldn't understand why she still made time for him in her life, considering all the heartache he'd caused her. The reasons were multifaceted, but also her secret. When asked, she would simply tell them that as terrible a husband as he'd been, he'd always been a good father. Josh had spent a lot of time with the kids when they were young, attending extracurriculars and coaching their youth teams, and he'd spent his weekends with the family instead of with friends. The latter was something she'd insisted upon before agreeing to marry him. She hadn't, however, accepted Josh's marriage proposal right away. "Let's see how things go for a while," she'd told him. As he left, he'd paused in the doorway. "There's something different about you," he'd said to her. "You're right," she'd said. "I am different." 8 weeks passed before she finally accepted his proposal. And unlike all her friends, she insisted on a simple wedding a couple of months after that, with only close friends and family in attendance. The reception dinner was potluck. One of her brothers-in-law manned the camera, and the guests finished out the evening dancing at a local nightclub. The short engagement and low-key wedding surprised Josh. He couldn't fathom why she didn't want the kind of wedding that all her friends had insisted upon. She told him she didn't want to waste the money, but in truth, she suspected she was already pregnant. It turned out she was, with Jacob, and for an instant, she thought perhaps that it might be true's, but that was impossible. The timing wasn't right, nor could True father a child, but in that moment, she understood that she had no desire to smile through the faux romance of a fairy tale wedding. By then, after all, she understood the nature of romance, and knew it had little to do with trying to create a fantasy. Real romance was spontaneous, unpredictable, and could be as simple as listening to a man read a love letter found in a lonely mailbox on a stormy September afternoon. At the cottage, Hope began to settle in. She set the wooden box on the kitchen table, put away the groceries, unpacked her belongings into the drawers so she wouldn't be living out of a suitcase all week, and texted her kids, letting them know she'd arrived. Then, donning a jacket, she stepped onto the back deck and slowly descended the steps to the sand. Her back and legs were stiff from the drive, and though she felt like taking a stroll, she wouldn't go far. She wanted to conserve her energy for the following day. The sky was the color of cobalt, but the breeze was chilly, and she tucked her hands into her jacket pockets. The air smelled of brine, primordial and fresh. Near a truck parked at the water's edge, a man sat in a lawn chair flanked by a row of fishing poles, their lines disappearing into the sea. He was shore fishing, and Hope wondered whether he'd have any luck. Never once had she seen someone at the beach actually reel in a fish from the shallow water, but it seemed to be a popular pastime. In her pocket, she felt her phone vibrate. Hoping it was one of the kids, she noted instead a missed call from Josh. She put the phone back in her pocket. Unlike Jacob and Rachel, he had been interested in her reasons for going to the beach. He thought she hated the beach, since she'd never wanted to vacation there while they'd been married. Whenever Josh had suggested that the family rent a house at the beach, Hope had always offered an alternative. Disney World, Williamsburg, camping trips in the mountains. They went skiing in West Virginia and Colorado,
and spent time in New York City, Yellowstone, and the Grand Canyon. Eventually, they'd purchased a cabin near Asheville, which Josh had kept in the divorce. For years, the thought of being at the beach had just been too painful. In her mind, the beach and True were forever linked. Nonetheless, she sent the kids to summer camps near Myrtle Beach and surfing camps at Nag's Head. Both Jacob and Rachel took naturally to surfing, and ironically, it was after one of Rachel's stays at surfing camp that Josh and Hope first began to heal the wounds of the divorce. While at camp, Rachel had complained of difficulty breathing and a racing heart. Back at home, they took her to see a pediatric cardiologist. And within a day, she was diagnosed with a previously undiscovered congenital defect that would require open-heart surgery. At the time, Hope and Josh hadn't spoken for nearly 4 months, but each of them set aside their antagonism for the benefit of their daughter. They alternated spending nights in the hospital and never once raised their voices in anger. The unity of their shared suffering had passed as soon as Rachel was released from the hospital, but it was enough to set in motion a relationship that allowed them to discuss the children in a cordial manner. As time passed, Josh remarried to a woman named Denise, and surprising Hope, something akin to friendship began to slowly renew. Partly, it had to do with Josh's marriage to Denise,